Over Vernal's shoulder, Ryan could see the look on Trader's face as he stared down the tattooed man.
Get going, Vernal.
All right, men. Fun's over. Put away your blasters.
Best get tourniquets on that boy's leg or he's gonna bleed out on you.
Yeah. See to it, men. Some other time, one eye.
Sooner the better.
Yeah.
Vernal pushed past his crew and vanished into the milling crowd. Trader and the others didn't stick around.
We cut that pretty fine.
Too damn fine.
Man, was I ever pumped to cut loose on those thieving, dickless bastards. Kaboom! Kaboom! Here, look at my hand!
Hunniker held up her trigger hand for them all to see. It was trembling violently.
You'd best start breathing through your nose. JB, pass her the shine.
Ryan angled his body so Poet couldn't hear what he had to say to Trader.
Levi Shabazz must be somewhere close by. He never travels without his crew. Not a good sign for us.
Definitely not a good sign. I didn't catch sight of Shabazz up at Zeo's compound. But then again, I wasn't turning over any rocks.
As Trader accelerated up the dirt road, he checked the mini-wag side mirrors to make sure Zeal's Sekhmen hadn't jumped in their own vehicles and followed them out of the ville. Behind him, there was nothing but his own swirl of dust on the winding track that rimmed the dry lake. He didn't really expect to see a bunch of wags in hot pursuit. The Baron knew better than to try something like that. He had to figure that a man as savvy as Trader would set up an ambush to cover his retreat from Virtue Lake.
All right, we're far enough.
Hey, you guys run out of gas?
Nope. We're just gonna talk some shop. You go on ahead. Let the crew know we'll be there shortly. JB, let them know Abe's still in charge till Ryan, Poet, and I get back.
I will.
All right. Ryan, Poet, here's the deal. I never guessed old Zeal would roll over so far on a deal. Know damn well it goes against his grain not to be the one coming out on top. Can't see why he'd be so anxious for the blasters and ammo that he'd take the screwing I gave him. And what's he think he's gonna do with 10 new blasters and 1,000 rounds of government anyway?
Not much.
Very suspicious, if you ask me.
We could always just move on. We can always offload the autoblaster somewhere else down the line. Sell them one by one if we have to. Plenty of barons be glad to pay top dollar for goods like that, even if they couldn't afford to take them all.
That's not an option.
Why not?
Because I'm not running from Levi Shabazz.
You really think he's in the ville?
Oh, he's there all right. He's the tail that wags the dog named Vernal. Question is, how's he hooked up with Lundquist Zeal? And what kind of ugly plan have they got hatched?
The answer there is easy. They plan on taking us down, ripping us off with the whole cargo. Wags, too.
Maybe. But then again, maybe not.
Way I see it, we've got two options. We either uncircle the wags and leave right now, or we sit tight and see it out. If we stay, we gotta go on triple red, shift our wags, and mass their firepower to defend the road. We put the trade goods meant for Zeal outside our defensive perimeter, maybe even mine them for a little extra protection. That way, if we had to, we could always just let them have the fucking blasters. No way could Zeal and Shabazz take the rest of the cargo from us.
What do you say to that, Ryan?
We've been butting heads with Shabazz for as long as I've been part of this crew. He's not much of a traitor. Doesn't have half the brains for the job. He's always made his real living by robbing and chilling. I don't know about you, but I'm tired of smelling that bastard's stink every time I turn upwind. I'm tired of looking over my shoulder for his blaster barrels every time we nail down a big score. And I'm tired of hearing about how he's fucked over another dirt poor vill for everything but the shit in the latrines.
Trader knew what Ryan was talking about. He had heard the rumors too. Rhodes Scuttlebutt had it that Shabazz had recently taken up extortion in a major way. As the story went, Shabazz claimed to have a stockpile of nerve gas he'd looted from some government cache. Given the few secret sites the man had actually found in his career, this sounded like nothing more than a bluff to Trader. Shabazz was mostly bluff when it came right down to it. At any rate, he supposedly had threatened to gas an entire vill unless they gave up golden slaves. The latter was another reason why Trader had a hard-on against the bastard. Shabazz not only thieved and murdered, but he also routinely did business in the skin trade. He supplied slaves for every job, be it sex or labor. And no doubt he helped keep Zeal's refinery labor force fully manned.
Yeah. Fucker gives the profession a bad name.
So let's do something about it. Instead of squatting up on top of the hill like a bunch of toothless old hags with our treasure under our skirts, let's take out the bastard. We've got enough firepower in Warwag 1 to split those barricades wide open and send the Baron's Sekhmen running for the darks. We can use the mini-wags to drive Shabazz from cover, and then we personally put him on the last train west. If he and Zeal have got a plan worked out to do us harm, you know Zeal won't go it alone. If we get rid of Shabazz, we can trade the blasters to the Baron, take our profit, and move on. What do you think, Poet?
If we knew for sure that Shabazz was after our cargo, I'd agree. But we don't. He could be here for some other reason that has nothing to do with us. Trying to take him out presents a major risk to the convoy down the line. We could lose war wags and crew in the attempt. And it's not a sure thing that we get him in the end either. Our best option is to stand pat and defend the convoy with mast blasters, do our business with Zeal, and hopefully roll away without firing a shot.
You think Shabazz is just gonna let us drive off? Are you high on Jolt, or have you just lost your nerve?
Shabazz isn't going to try and take us if he knows we're ready for him. He's way smarter than that.
Shabazz is as dumb as a swampy with its head up.
Cool it. Now, like it or not, Poet's right. You got the heat up, Ryan, and you're not seeing the picture clearly. If we go in there with blasters blazing, rockets roaring, we could touch off the Baron's gasoline stockpile. Or maybe even the whole rat-blasted refinery. Ain't so many places around here making even half-assed fuel that we can afford to let one go up in smoke. Be a cold day in hell before these folks build themselves another refinery.
Ryan said nothing. His blue eyes stared unblinking at Trader's reflection in the rear view.
And even though Zeal's gas is the staggering shit, we got vills along our route that are desperate for it. No matter how much it makes the wags knock and ping, they want it, and they'll trade their best goods for it. And there's another thing. These military blasters were trading Zeal for fuel. Only a real special buyer like him is going to have the extra jack to spend on them. They're what you might call a luxury item. Gas is another story. Everybody needs it. If not for wags, then generators. And it can be resold in small quantities by middlemen. You can't split a long blaster up into half pints. It either shoots or it ain't nothing but spare parts. What I'm saying is, we can make a real sweet profit here if the deal goes through.
I think you're overestimating Shabazz's smarts, and way underestimating his greed. Not to mention the fact that he's got Baron Zeal pulling his chain.
You said it yourself, Ryan. Our wags can handle anything Zeal and Shabazz can throw at us. We've got the blasters, the armor, and the crew. If that sorry son of a bitch comes after us, it'll be the last thing he ever does.
The mutated scorpion was 2.5 feet long, its body amber and black. In the heat of the day, it moved incredibly fast. Legs a blur, wicked front pincer claws raised, and curved stinger, which looked longer than Ryan's panga, held high over its back, poised to strike. Unlike its pre-nuke-cost ancestors, this creature was an aggressive daytime hunter, and its preferred food wasn't other smaller insects, but mammal meat, size no object. That was thanks to their new kind of venom, filled with noxious enzymes. It could kill, in a matter of seconds, literally anything that walked the hellscape that was Deathlands. It feared nothing, and it never retreated.
Shit! Damn! Thing moves too fast for my scattergun!
I got it.
No.
The two turned towards Ryan. He already had his panga drawn, and he held it by the tip of the blade.
Come on. Come on.
The point skewered the creature's back. The blade slid through to the hilt, pinning it to the ground.
Holy shit, Ryan!
No need to waste a round.
If you haven't noticed, it's not dead.
I'm not blind, Poet.
Legs scrabbling on the rocks, the scorpion humped up against the panga's crossguard, trying to break free of the ground. Creamy yellow gore oozed out around the blade, and the curved ebony point of its stinger kept striking at the panga's pommel.
Not a very big one.
Ryan jerked his panga free and walked to the back of the dead insect. He reached down and picked up the tail, right below the stinger.
There. Dinner.
Ooh, wow! Have a look at this, guys.
Ryan and Poet went to Hun, who was peering into a dark hole in a pile of rocks. The hole was filled with small scorpions, roughly 6 inches long. There were about 50 of them, squirming over one another, waving their claws and stingers.
The big one was hunting food for them.
No food coming now.
The double-aught buckshot and high-brass concussion shredded the packed mass of baby scorpions into a fine mist. White gun smoke poured out of the much-widened opening in the earth.
Lots more where they came from.
Yeah? So what?
So nothing.
Hey, Poet, why don't you have a look-see over that far rise?
A look-see at what, exactly?
At whatever the fuck is over there. Just leave me and Ryan alone for a few minutes.
The gray-haired man glanced at her bright eyes and burning cheeks, then at Ryan, whose face was as cold and impassive as steel.
Yeah. Why don't I scout on ahead, then?
Ryan knew if there'd been any real strategic point to the long wreck, Poet would never have agreed to break up the threesome. Ryan and Poet had been sent out in the hottest part of the day to hoof it 5 miles over some rad-blasted ground because the traitor was tired of hearing them battle over the defensive strategy. It was his way of saying to his two war advisors, "Go out there and don't come back until you've worked it out." Ryan took satisfaction in the knowledge that, as far as he could see, Poet had no more interest in working it out than he did. Hun, too, was making the others in the crew nervous. She was still way amped from the gaudy set to, talking wild, acting wilder. Homicidus interruptus. Of course, Ryan knew what was coming as soon as Poet nipped out of sight, but it pleased him to act like he didn't have a clue. He stood on the edge of the hill, surveying the far shore of Virtue Lake with his telescope, doing his job.
You know, it sure is hellish warm out here.
Ryan didn't turn. He didn't have to. Out of the corner of his one good eye, he could see her carefully set her shotgun against a rock and kick out of her well-worn boots. Then she unfastened the waistband of her BDUs and started rolling them down over her hips. Underwear was one of those pre-dark luxuries Trader was always going on about.
You got something I want, Ryan.
Lucky me.
Ryan pretended to concentrate on the view downrange. Hun moved up against him from behind. She took off her sleeveless gray t-shirt as well. He could feel her bare breasts, small and very firm, push into the middle of his back. And over his shoulder he caught the cinnamon smell of her hot skin. She reached around his waist for his belt and unbuckled it.
You're damn right you're lucky. I could always get it from Poet.
Why don't you then?
It was his turn last night. I think it nearly chilled him. Besides, you know I like a change of pace.
With a practiced jerk, she dropped his fatigue pants down around his boot tops. Foreplay with Hun was virtually non-existent. She liked nothing better than to get right down to it. Though they'd had an off-and-on thing going for many months, she and Ryan had never kissed, and they had never touched each other except in a purely sexual way. There was no real tenderness between them, only intense desire, fury, and fulfillment. Ryan laid her on her back on a big flat rock and plunged into her without further preamble. The sun blazed against his back, and her interior was just as meltingly hot. Sweat poured down his spine as he thrust, parried, thrust. Beneath him, Hun opened her eyes inches from his face. They were crazy. Not seeing him or anything else. Once Hun got the heat all the way up, the way she had it up now, she was hard to cool down. She wasn't all that much to look at, but there was something about her. Something magical, electric, a buzzing excitement that she could pass on with a look, a touch. When it came to sex, Honecker had the power to raise the dead. Poet knelt out of sight on the far side of the boulder field, watching the two of them go at it. He had no proprietary feelings when it came to Hunniker. Only a fool could. After all, Hun's appetite for both men and women, singly and in various combinations, was legendary among Trader's crew. Nor did he covet Ryan's youth. It was like he'd happened upon a pair of lions mating in some clearing in the jungle bush. He had to stop and stare. He was called Poet because of the way he saw things, not because he could write verse or even write his own name, which of course he couldn't. Because he was who he was, he didn't view Ryan's taking over his war captaincy as a defeat. He saw it as inevitable, like death. He harbored no ill will toward the man. Even so, he was determined to fight to keep his position as long as he could. He had earned it through hard work and his own spilled blood. For him, it was a matter of personal honor